From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCullum. The La Crosse River Marsh is a natural wetland, home to many unique plants, birds, fish, and possibly toxic lead contamination. A couple researchers from UW-La Crosse have recently raised the issue and are looking closely at one area of the marsh, on the northeast side of Myrick Park, former home of the La Crosse Gun Club. Dr. Colin Belby and Dr. Ryan Peroy are assistant professors in UWL's Geography and Earth Science Department. They're the ones studying lead in the marsh, along with UWL Geography undergrad Sarah Erickson. I recently spoke with Belby and Erickson. Belby talks about why they decided to start studying the marsh.
A couple of years ago, just kind of moving to this area and getting out into the local environment, I noticed that there was this old gun club shelter down there, and I was kind of curious whether or not there was still, or why that gun club shelter was there and what the history was, because I didn't really see anything associated with the former trap shooting that used to go on there. And then through some of my research for other classes that I teach, I came across a history of Lower La Crosse River Marsh, and they talked about this gun club that operated there for many years. And so that also kind of piqued my interest in understanding more about this gun club and the potential environmental impacts of it and whether or not there was ongoing impacts from that club. And so at that point, you know, it was kind of in the back of my head, and I had some other projects going on at that point in time, and things were pretty busy here. But Sarah actually came up and asked if we had any projects we'd be interested in working together on. And I said, yeah, you know, this is something that I've been interested in for about a year and a half or so. And she seemed to be pretty interested in kind of looking into that. And so we went out and took some preliminary samples, and it kind of took off from there.
And Sarah, what intrigued you about this project to get involved in it?
Well, I never knew that there was a gun club there in the first place, so I was like, whoa, that's really surprising. I didn't know that all took place back then, and I was really curious to see if there were levels in the marsh, because I'm a biology minor, so that kind of coincides with both of my majors.
And the La Crosse Gun Club, it operated from 1932 to 1963.
Right.
And that the historical analysis of the Lower La Crosse River, which you just mentioned,
uh-huh.
One fact in that study that I found pretty interesting was that in 1952, so only 20 years after it had been opened, there was so much lead in the marsh, so many bullets, that some company had to come and clean it out and scrap it.
Right, yeah. And that's, you know, and to be honest, we tried to find more information out about that cleanup, and through historical archive search, we couldn't find anything. So really that one little sentence in that report is the only thing I've heard about in terms of a potential cleanup that's going on out there. We checked out the old Parks and Rec minutes, and there wasn't anything in there about it that we could find. But yeah, but clearly there must have been a lot of lead shot being pumped into that marsh for it to pay for the cleanup costs by collecting primarily, I'm assuming, just the lead shot. And so there's other potential contamination associated with the corrosion of that lead shot that we're also interested in looking at.
As you've said, that this is very preliminary part of your study.
Right.
Do you have any idea how many bullets could be located in the marsh?
In terms of, so they weren't shooting necessarily bullets. It was lead pellets that would be shot out there. So there's a slight difference, but so quantitatively there would be a greater amount because of my basic understanding of lead shot. But no, I'm not exactly sure how much is out there, but Sarah might be able to speak to one of the previous studies that was done in 1994 by an undergraduate student in the biology department. He went out there and collected some short cores of sediment and did some x-ray analysis of them just to get at the sense of how much lead shot there is out there. And Sarah, am I correct that he found quite a bit of lead pellets still kind of in that upper 10 centimeters?
Yeah, he did.
And so so that was another, once we kind of found that study and we found that he was in 1994 still finding a fair amount of lead shot near the surface, that was also kind of a secondary thing that said, you know, we should take a greater look at this and see what the potential impacts are and how much is still out there. But he only, in that previous study, was a good initial first look, but he didn't really look at the concentration of lead that's within the sediment. And he only looked at about 10 or so sites out there, 20 sites out there. Whereas this study is looking at around 450 sites or so. So we're doing a much more intensive survey of the marsh sediments to really try to map out where this lead might be. But yeah, I can't give you a good estimate at this point in terms of the amount of lead shot in the soil. The interesting thing, I guess, is that as you said, there was this 1952 cleanup that occurred, and it shut down 11 years later, and they were still finding that much lead shot within the soil 11 years later. So there were state championships there, national championships there, and so it was a pretty active gun club for 30 plus years.
So can you talk about, in this phase of your study, what exactly it is that you're trying to find?
Yeah. So at this point, early on, what we're trying to do is we're trying to essentially figure out where that lead is and how much of it is out there. And so we have a kind of a multifaceted approach. And Sarah, I don't know if you want to talk to what you're doing for the lead study.
Yeah. Like, what's it like, Sarah, when you go out? Understanding you're in a boat. It is the marsh.
Yeah.
So what a daily study is like?
Well, we're on a floating platform raft type deal, and we get out there usually pretty early by 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning, and from there we go to the points that we need to sample, and we get there by using a GPS, which will take us there using a compass-like feature. Once we get there, we take a sediment core of the point, like we try to get within a meter, and from there, we take three increments of 5 centimeters. So we have 0 to 5 centimeters, 5 to 10, and 10 to 15, and we bag them up all in separate bags. Then I get back to the lab later on, and then I only take the 0 to 5 centimeters and put the other ones in the freezer. And from there, we dry them out, grind them up, put them in sample cups. Then they're waiting to be scanned by the X-ray fluorescence analyzer that we have.
Yeah, and so as Sarah said, it's a pretty lengthy process that we have to go to. And so in advance, we knew where these four trap shooting stations were located, looking at some historical area photographs. And then from that, and based upon the predicted trajectory of the lead shot, we have essentially a potential fallout zone. And so on top of that fallout zone, we established a 20-meter grid of points that we want to sample, and through the GPS then we can go out to those predetermined points, get right on top of them and sample. And then once we do that, once we get those 430 or so samples, we can have a very high resolution map of where that lead is at the surface. In addition to getting the concentration of lead in that upper 5 centimeters, we're also looking for lead shot counts within that upper 5 centimeters, because that lead shot can continue to corrode, break down over time, and provide additional byproducts of lead to the sediment.
In your analysis of the preliminary data, have you found any high concentration of lead, or is that the next phase of the study?
So we went out, as we were developing the proposal for this research, Dr. Peroy, my colleague, and I went out and collected some samples in the fall of last year, and we only collected about 12 or 15 samples. And what we did was we went to the one remaining kind of remnants of a trap shooting station. Some people might have seen it. You can park there right next to the eco center. And we went out from that and collected at known intervals going away from that, and just did some grab samples of sediment from the surface. And we definitely found at the point where you would expect the majority of the shot to be raining out into the marsh and being trapped in the sediment, we found concentrations of lead upwards of around 1,200 parts per million, which is significantly higher than the kind of the background concentrations you might expect of around 20, 25 parts per million. But this was, this was a small number of samples. We haven't sent those samples out for independent verification. I mean, we're pretty confident in it using the equipment we did, but the standard protocol is to collect samples and then always send off at least 10% off for independent verification, just to make sure that everything's going right here. And so we haven't gotten to that point yet, and these 400 plus samples that Sarah is collecting with us this summer have not been analyzed at all. So it's still pretty early on in the game. In addition to the samples that she's collecting, Ryan and I and a couple other students have gone out and we've collected 30 deeper cores that go down about a meter or more into the sediment, kind of overlapping with the points that Sarah is sampling. And the idea of that is to see maybe the greatest concentrations of lead or lead shot aren't maybe at the surface, but are actually down beneath the surface. And so we want to map out not only kind of in the horizontal direction where that lead might be, but also in the vertical. And so we can then develop kind of a three-dimensional map of where this lead-contaminated soil might be.
And are you looking for any other minerals that may have gone into the marsh, and what have you found?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the ongoing effort is to think about what are some other potential contaminants associated with a lead shot. Arsenic is sometimes found associated with lead shot. And we did find that arsenic concentrations kind of paralleled the lead changes in lead concentrations as you went away from the trap shooting station. But at this point, it's pretty early on to say whether or not they are at a potentially harmful level or not. Other than that, you know, there are things that are important for potentially binding that lead up so it's not a contaminant to the biology that might be living out there potentially ingesting it. So we're interested in looking at the pH of the water and the soil, the cation exchange capacity, the phosphorus content. Phosphorus is really good at grabbing onto the stuff and forming secondary minerals that can retain it. And carbonate concentrations is another thing that can bind this lead down and reduce the environmental impact of it.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. My guests today are Colin Belby. He is an assistant professor in geography and earth science at UW La Crosse. And Sarah Erickson. She is a UW La Crosse geography major who is concentrating in environmental science. They're studying potential lead contamination in La Crosse's marsh. So you've stressed the fact that this study, it's very preliminary. People shouldn't be panicking
right.
That the entire marsh is contaminated with lead.
No, yeah, and that's a good point. It's not the entire marsh, right? It's a relatively small area that we're looking at. It's maybe 400 meters by 400 meters. So it's a highly visible area of the marsh. It's right next to the Myra Kickson Park there. So
if there were, if the lead contamination was to be a problem within the La Crosse Marsh, and this is something that you'll look at later on, what sort of effects will this have on plants? What sort of effects would it have on wildlife? And then people?
It would probably mostly affect waterfowl if it isn't bound up. Like if they have access to it, it'll probably affect them the most. It can get bound up in their organs, like their stomachs, intestines, etc. But for people, it's not really that much of a concern unless they're directly eating the sediment, which I don't think is happening. But if people did eat the waterfowl, it wouldn't really affect much either because people don't usually eat the organs and it doesn't really get bound up in the muscles that people typically eat. In terms of vegetation, vegetation can absorb it, but I'm not positive of the effects on vegetation.
So people canoeing, kayaking, or wading around in waders in the marsh don't have to panic?
I don't think they have need to panic at this point at all. That's one of our questions for future research efforts is to actually go out and sample fish, sample different types of aquatic vegetation that are out there. Sample the water and actually see, are we getting movement of the lead from the sediment up into the water column, movement from the sediment into the vegetation? Is it bioaccumulating in the vegetation or is it getting into the fish? And as Sarah said, you know, it can alter the development and the reproduction of these animals that are potentially living out there. But it's pretty early on in the game. We got to have a better sense of the bioavailability of this lead before we can really say whether or not that's going on. But lead contamination is a significant. It's one of the top leading. It's one of the leading causes of environmental contamination in kind of aquatic habitats in the U.S. So it's definitely something to be concerned about in terms of the integrity of that local environmental resource.
So the marsh is constantly changing. Some years the water level's higher, mm-hmm. Other years it's dry. Does that have any effect on lead?
The lead is pretty stable in terms of its, what we call the redox state and redox amorphic state. And so it doesn't really become more or less mobile, as far as I know, depending upon the water levels. I guess more so what could cause a movement of it is if you have higher water levels, you might start to scour some of this sediment out, and it's relatively fluffy, loose sediment out there in the marsh, and so you could start to pick some of that up and transport it to to other areas within the marsh. And that's an additional thing that we're interested in looking at is, you know, can we see any evidence of movement of this lead from the existing shotfall zone to areas outside of it.
And you've mentioned a handful of things that you would like to look at in the future. But as far as what you're doing right now, what do you want to do with the data that you do collect?
Sure. So the data that we collect right now, I think primarily we want to basically just get this baseline information and use that baseline information to, I guess, first of all, help to direct us with future studies that look at maybe what some people might consider more important impacts, the impacts of the lead. And so this is kind of that first stage in getting at that point. In addition to that, I think it's really important for environmental education, particularly with the Meyer-Kixon Eco Park down there. So they've expressed some interest in looking at the results and potentially kind of building an educational experience around it. You know, you think about this thing's been shut down for 50-plus years, and it's still potentially causing problems. And so people, you know, it's good to be aware of the long-term environmental impacts of current actions, and this is maybe a potential project that could help build that understanding within the local community. In addition to that, you know, the DNR has expressed interest in looking at this data and trying to figure out what the impacts are. So we'll provide the data to the DNR, we'll provide it to the owners of the property, including the city, so they can kind of decide where they want to go from there.
Do you know why it's taken so long for this to be studied and also for anyone to really look at it as a potential problem?
I don't. Sarah, do you know why?
Has it just been forgotten
and lost in lacrosse's history? Or
possibly. I didn't know about it. I, like, grew up here, and I had no clue.
Yeah. So. Like I said, I've only been here for going on 2 years now, mm-hmm. so it's new to me. But if you talk to people in the local community, they definitely know that this was once there. But in addition, you know, you talk to some people and you say, we're doing this project, and they say, oh, I never knew that there was this, as Sarah said, that there was this gun club down there. And you say, well, there's a building right there that says the Cross Gun Club. And they say, well, that's what that's for. You know, so I think there is kind of a forgetfulness, a lack of awareness that this was once there. And, you know, and there's no shortage of good research going on in the community here with the Fish and Wildlife and the USGS and the DNR and the university. And I think a lot of people are sometimes people venture out beyond their immediate local area. And so I wonder if that has maybe had some impact on it. But I'm not certain, you know. And there definitely has been an awareness, I guess, amongst some of the professors that I've interacted with that this is something that, you know, we should maybe take a look at, but in terms of actually getting out there and doing it, I don't know if it just wasn't the right people in the right place until now or what.
And one of the UWL biology professors, Roger Harrow,
yeah,
he has some interest because a couple years ago he found deformed dragonflies, and there's might be this link, but who knows?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to think about the different collaborations within the UWL community that could come from this research.
Sure. Yeah. Research. I mean, so right now, Dr. Proy and I are working with some people from physics trying to date these cores that we pull out. So there's ways that we can get at, for instance, 1963 within the core, which is coincides with the year it shut down, which helps us to figure out whether or not lead is moving within that sediment. There are folks from biology that are interested in looking at the short-term evolution of organisms living within this potentially contaminated water and whether or not certain organisms, microorganisms, have adapted to that or not. There are folks that are interested in looking at fish physiology. Dr. Harrow is interested in looking at deformities within these invertebrates. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that could potentially be tied into this, and that was part of the reason we were so excited about doing this project was the kind of the crossover amongst the different departments. And I guess the one kind of unifying theme for all of us is we're all part of the River Studies program or River Studies Center on campus, and so we all kind of have vested interest within rivers and water bodies, and if we can find those projects that kind of tie us together, it's that much better.
And Sarah, what has this meant for you being a student? Did you ever think that you would have such hands-on training and be part of such an important study?
Well, I knew I was going to participate in undergraduate research at some point because I'm part of the McNair Scholars Program at UWL. And for that, we have to come up with a research project for our senior year. So I knew I was, like I said, I was going to do something, but I wasn't sure yet until I talked to Dr. Belby and Dr. Proy, and they had this idea to look at the marsh. And then I was like, okay, that sounds like a good idea. And from then on, I've been really busy with it. And
is there anything else the two of you want to talk about?
You know, I should kind of acknowledge some of the folks that have helped us out along the way. You know, so Sarah has kind of hinted at a few things. She's part of the McNair program, which is a program for underrepresented students or students with financial need. And so that's been very helpful in initially just getting this thing going in the first place. The university has been very helpful. They've through undergraduate research grants, they've been able to provide small pools of money to help fund Sarah to do the research so she wouldn't have to get a full-time job this summer. This is essentially her full-time job, which is awesome for her, and it looks really good when she applies for graduate school. And then Ryan Proy and I, we also applied for a small pool of funding from some faculty research grants at University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. And so those have been very, very helpful to us in enabling us to do this research on a pretty tight budget, I would say, at this point. So that's been helpful. And then just the folks from the Eco Park and the city, the DNR, have been helpful in kind of getting us some background information on what might be going on out there. I guess one of the things I would try to get across again is just kind of stay tuned. We'll see what comes out. Hopefully we'll find things aren't that bad out there after all.
That was UWL Assistant Professor of Geography Colin Belby and Sarah Erickson, a UWL student studying geography. They, along with Ryan Peroy, are studying potential lead contamination in the La Crosse River Marsh. On next week's Newsmakers, a candidates forum for the upcoming recall election. Republican incumbent Dan Kopanky and Democratic challenger Jennifer Schilling, both of La Crosse, are vying for the 32nd Senate District seat. We invite you to email us your questions for Kopanky and Schilling. Find more information at wpr.org/lacrosse. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Our production team includes Steve Roysom, Mary Meehan Strube, John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse.